Let's make sure you are in fellowship, and let's continue on here. We are dealing with this issue. Again, the last one we closed with here is Romans 14, 21, which again deals with the consciences of believers. And that's the important thing, really, in this whole passage. And we're, like I said, we're getting ready to deal with this at length, so I'm not going to say too much here. But this really deals with religious scruples. That have been sort of ingrained in people. In the Roman church, most likely it had to do with Jewish asceticism, although one really can't rule out that there were certain ascetic practices that the Gentiles engaged in which they would avoid certain things, certain foods, certain meats. And really, the interesting thing is, it's not specifically so much this whole passage, in fact, about necessarily kinds of food. It's meat, specifically, that's singled out. In fact, in the whole chapter, this is really the only place where drinking wine is mentioned. So clearly, wine is a secondary issue to all of this. And I recognize that when I cited this verse, and that's why I want to point out the issue is, when you're dealing with believers, their level of faith, their understanding, and their consciences is really what this is about. Do not run roughshod over another believer's conscience because you can, because you have the freedom to. That's really the essence of this. So again, while the consumption of alcohol is acceptable, you have to realize that people are born and raised in different environments, and we all come from different backgrounds. And all of this, as we've talked about, some backgrounds, wine and drinking is just treated as something people do. It's just the way it is. And in many of those backgrounds, drunkenness is not necessarily a problem. That's not to say it can't be. Could be. But it's not necessarily a problem. But the reality is the scruples are the issue. So other environments, you get in, they were taught. I mean, we were hardcore indoctrinated immediately upon salvation. This was a big deal in the Southern Baptist Church. Again, so much so that I even used their quotes up here in the beginning of this to document some of the modern ideas, current ideas. This is not old. 2006 is not that long ago. And this has been their view for quite some time about alcohol. So I hear we're ready to move on now. Paul instructed Timothy to use small quantities of wine in order to address a medical issue that Timothy apparently had with his stomach. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 23. No longer drink water. And they've supplied the word exclusively as though he meant don't drink water ever. But in the ancient world, like in some places in the modern world, that water is not necessarily good for you. You should avoid it, probably. In certain areas, there was no doubt that water was tainted. Could cause problems. But use a little wine for the sake of your stomach and your frequent ailments. They're a good example of here. Timothy, as far as we know, didn't have anything spiritual going on. But he was apparently relatively sickly. I can't compare it, say, to Paul. And we don't know what that means. We don't know how often. I mean, was he sick once a year? Would that be frequent for Paul? It's hard to say what frequent means in the context. So, again, reading too much into this verse. And this verse will be one of the ones, of course, that people argue about. Well, he didn't mean alcoholic wine. Well, yes, he did. He clearly did. He used oinos here. He meant alcoholic wine. So, one, there are many studies that have demonstrated that there are some medical benefits to consuming small quantities of wine and beer. There's no study that proves Jack Daniels is good for you. There's no study that says Stoli is the way to goalie. Hard liquor is not really considered much in these studies, and nor probably should it be. Now, this is not, again, an argument. We're not here to try to convert people to drink. This is not the point. The point is, number one, Romans 14 will make it very plain, you have to go with your conscience. The conscience is here for a reason. However imperfect the conscience is, it still serves a function. And so we have to deal with that. And to try to get your brother to do something his conscience tells him not to do is sinning against your brother. So don't do that. So, however, and again, this is not a deal. Okay, there are some medical benefits. So if you aren't drinking, start. That's not what we're saying. That's not even what these studies say. We're not suggesting that. Those of you who aren't healthy, drink more. That's going to be our new diet. I think we could get more people with some just changes. Subtle changes. We could become the fun church. We've already been accused of that. My God, we've been accused of everything you can imagine. From drug addiction to alcoholism to wife swapping to immorality, adultery. I mean, if you only knew what all you all have been accused of. And you're horrible people. I know it. But I know also none of that's true. So, weirdly enough. So, point two, however, while the New Testament does not necessarily address the hazards of excessive alcohol, not in a lot of ways, not in a lot of verses, it doesn't. Many studies indicate that drinking to excess is not healthy. I mean, there are physical issues involved in this as well, and can be dangerous. I recognize, like with any addiction, see, the problem is people look at certain addictions and they turn up their noses, they put on the smug mask, and they look down their nose at you and let you know your addiction is no good, but the fact that I go to Macy's every week is fine. No, it's not. It's an addiction. Shopping's as much of an addiction as alcohol and drugs and other things. People engage, you know, in all manner of things. They have addictions to sports, gambling. Some things are necessarily bad for you. Some things are morally what we would call neutral. There are people who have addictions to TV. There are people who have addictions to Home Shopping Network, God help them, or QVC or whatever these stupid channels are that cater to Babylonians 24/7. God, isn't it enough? Can't you go shopping? Now I got to sit at home and buy a bunch. I've got a remote. Buy. You know, those are addictions just as much as anything else is. There are people who go out, buy Cleveland Browns tickets every year. God help them. How stupid are they? Go up there and sit in that stadium, freeze their butts off, hang around with the other bunch of drunk idiots in the dog pound, and watch their team lose and lose and lose and lose and lose. And that's an addiction. It's whether people admit it or not, it's true. They can't break it. They don't want to break it. And so there's a lot of things that are addictive. So again, people tend to look down on certain addictions. Now, looking down on addictions is addictive, isn't it? Be careful. You'll get addicted to being smug. You don't want to be smug. These are things believers need to avoid. Well, Roman numeral 5 here, the problems and dangers associated with the imprudent use of alcohol. While it is evident that wine and other alcoholic beverages can be part of the blessing of God when used appropriately, it is also evident that alcohol can be quite destructive if abused. B, since drinking to excess is a result of succumbing to the lust pattern of the old sin nature, it should not be surprising to find that it may result in other damaging expressions of the old sin nature. See, drunkenness is associated with the mental attitude sins of anger, strife, and jealousy, which are often present but are exacerbated, that word means made worse, by alcohol. Esther, I was watching TV the other day and I listened to the newscaster mispronounce exacerbate about 10 times. And I thought, why don't they educate these idiots before they put them on television? But that doesn't stop them. It's not exacerbate. Learn the word if you're going to use it in public. And especially if you're going to use it on TV. Esther chapter 7. Certain things bother me, see. I'm addicted to that kind of stuff. Just critical of these people who butcher the English language. And are passed off as people I need to listen to. Like Haley Wilgus. Oh boy. Scott. Haley. The king arose in his anger from drinking wine. Uh-oh. Yeah, he's a mad drunk. You don't like mad mean drunks. And went into the palace garden, but Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther. For he saw that harm had been determined by him against the king, against him rather by the king. Now when the king returned from the garden palace, into the palace, a place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. And the king said, "Will he even assault the queen with me in the house?" And as the word went out over the king, out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And the king immediately says, "Hang him on it." Now, do you think this was maybe fueled by alcoholic rage? Now, Haman had it coming, don't get me wrong. Now, God used this drunken king to execute his justice on this guy. But does that make the drunken king right? No. No, it does not. And also, the one we just looked at, Romans 13:13, strife is in that list. And again, some people suggest that there's a connection. And there is. D, because alcohol lowers the inhibitions of those that consume it. Verbal sins are the frequent result among those that overindulge. You've probably been at a bar. If you haven't, well, start going. No, don't start going. As I said, some of these things are hard to get over, too, because these things are ingrained in the conscience. And the conscience is sensitive, and it's meant to be. That's good. People say, I wish my conscience wasn't so sensitive. That was one of the things one guy said. He said, you know, the conscience, the answer to it's making it less sensitive. No. Searing the conscience is not the answer to dealing with it. Although, some people do. Proverbs 21, wine is a mocker. A strong drink is a brawler. And whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. Well, one, some believe that alcohol is being personified as a villain that brings destruction into the life, while others think the terms wine and strong drink are used by metonymy, that means the substitution of one thing for another, to refer to those under the influence of alcohol. And the idea would then be, if it's personified, it's easy enough. Wine is personified as a character that sits around and laughs at you. Strong drink is a character that likes to fight. The Fighting Irish. You know. Or if it's the other way here, metonymy, one intoxicated by wine is a mocker. He becomes a mocker. He engages in these types of behaviors. One who, drunk with strong drink, becomes a brawler. They're prone to want to fight. Either way, it doesn't really materially affect what it's saying here. And I think the sense is plain enough that these are not good. The wine and strong drink are associated with vices here, not virtues. You don't see something like wine is generous. Strong drink is patient. I know when people get drunk, they're really patient. Oh no, not hardly. Well, two, to exercise wisdom, one must be in possession of all one's faculties. And alcohol tends to blur one's senses and clouds one's judgment. This is not new news, by the way. I put it in the doctrine as though it's new news. It's not. Everyone should know these things. This needed to be taught in school, actually. Two, both the terms mocker and brawler deal with that which is loud or turbulent. They emphasize the conflict and commotion that often comes as a result of intoxication. I just ask any of you, you don't have to raise your hands, I won't embarrass you, but have you ever had a drink too many, or one, or two, or ten, and done something stupid that you regretted? Said something stupid, wished you hadn't, wished you could take it back? Did that ever happen once? Yeah, well, it happens frequently is the problem. And so much so that this is proverbial. It's in Proverbs. It's proverbial that this happens. We know this happens. So the person that is intoxicated begins to lose some of... they emphasize again the conflict and commotion. So the person that's intoxicated begins to lose some of his normal self-consciousness. And for some people who are tense and uptight and relaxing them a little bit, it's not necessarily a bad idea. Other people, not so good. They don't need to get any more relaxed. They're relaxed enough. That's their problem in some cases. A little too relaxed. They need to be a little more uptight. Not in a bad sense, I mean. So it may become more talkative. As he becomes more noisy and restless, he often begins to disturb the peace of those around him. Nobody's ever gotten drunk and been loud at a bar or at a party or anywhere else. And of course they have. You hear the voices rising. You hear the arguments start. You know. And there are some people that thrive in this environment. I personally don't like it. Never have. Not to say I've never engaged in it. I have. But it's not ever been my favorite thing, sitting around getting drunk and arguing. If that sounds like fun for you, it doesn't sound fun to me. And people do this. And what's accomplished out of it the next day? Nobody remembers the conversation. What did we talk about? I don't know. I just know you were wrong and I was right. As my friend Tom Hardwick, or Tom Balding, used to say, here's to you and here's to me. And may we never disagree. Mm. You know? But if someday, perhaps we do, here's to me and to hell with you. You know? So, that's one of those drinking limericks, see? And I still have fondness for that man. So he begins to engage in unwise verbal behavior. He gets loud, obnoxious. You like, you know. And I watch people that do this and they're not drinking. That's what weirds me out. I'll be out in public and watch people act like they're totally drunk. Well, they are drunk. They're under their sin nature. They're completely intoxicated with it. And they'll act like complete idiots. And they're not drinking at all. Matter of fact, we had a deal where we were out on the golf course one time. We had this woman playing with us, and she was slow. And I get it, and it's frustrating to get behind a woman on a golf course, especially if she can't play golf. A good golfer, if it's on a sword and stam, okay. Who cares? You know, I could name 10 female golfers, and nobody would know because it's not a sport. I'm kidding. It is a sport, somewhat. Just as much as golfing is for men. But my point of this is that these men behind us were so impatient, they hit balls directly into us numbers of times. And then they came by and said, and we finally waved them by because we got tired of it. And we were trying to stay in fellowship. Hard to stay in fellowship with golf balls flying at your head. Makes you mad. I mean, it's dangerous. And so we finally waved them through, and they came by, and they were running their mouths. And I said, you know what, man? You know, and there was a lady there, too. I said, I have to be drunk to act that way. I don't act that way in my normal waking mind. What is wrong with these people? And they were not intoxicated. Not on alcohol. They were intoxicated under their sin natures, though. Why? Because it's all about them. And this poor girl was causing them to wait. I'm not a big fan of waiting, don't get me wrong. Patience is not my strong suit. I know it is for the rest of you, but it's not for me. And so I understood they were frustrated, but I would have never done that. Even I would have had to have been drunk, literally fallen down drunk to do that. Well, he begins to engage in unwise verbal behavior that may include speaking to others in derisive or mocking way, boasting about real or perceived abilities. Oh, how many stories have you heard from somebody who's drunk and you found out, oh, that wasn't true? I've had people tell me stories in time, you know, when we were sitting around drinking and stuff. I thought, that's weird, you know. And then I later found out that wasn't even true at all. Just made it up. That's not good. And their abilities are always exaggerated when they're drunk. You know. I they're friends with the greatest celebrities. They've done the greatest things, you know, all of it. I ran with the bulls in Spain. You find out they've never been to Spain. What they meant was they went down to the stockyards once and a cow stepped on them. Stories become changed when you're drinking. It becomes, you know, you exaggerate. You know? So, aggressively challenging or provoking others. You know, you see that guy gets drunk. He's going to fight everybody in the place. And I've known people like this. I've had friends who've told me, this is my deal. I like to get drunk and start trouble. Don't. Stop it. This isn't what you're supposed to be doing as a believer. And on one particular guy I know specifically, he did it one too many times and three or four guys nearly killed him. They put him in the hospital for 4 or 5 weeks. And they nearly killed him. Nearly beat him to death in a parking lot. And nothing good comes out of this stuff. I've seen him. You know, what the tendency towards violence, which God, men have this enough. Get the testosterone down. And then you add alcohol to that, and it's a known fact that increases it. The studies have proven this. This isn't new news. So again, all this, all too often, leads to physical altercations. Then you're into the, now you're not only mocking, now you're brawling. Now we're going to fight. Well, wine is associated with the violence that is quite common among criminals. Proverbs chapter 4. Again, violence is a big deal. Do you see God as, one, being a violent God or advocating violence? Or is he a God of peace? How many times is it referred to as the God of peace? The God of love. It's hardly ever, can't think of anyone. The God of violence will get you. I don't think so. So here they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Again, whether you got here metonymy, wine, you know, that produces violence, or wine that's bought by means of violence, stealing from other people. You got a couple of ways you can go here with this. And again, I haven't done the verse, so I'm not going to try to exegete it here for you. But the fact is, wine and violence are associated pretty clearly here. You can't miss it. So, the lifestyle of the criminal is one that is characterized by wickedness and the often violent exploitation of others. Two, research has demonstrated a consistent relationship between alcohol use and violent behavior. Both perpetrators and victims of violent crimes are likely to have consumed alcohol prior to certain aggressive acts, such as rape, assault, domestic violence, and murder. And again, now, do people do all of these things without drinking? Yes, sadly. But does drinking tend to make these things worse? Yes. This is from an article in 1993, The Epidemiology of Alcohol-Related Violence. And one nice thing when you're doing research, I would have to say in the last days, outside of all the abuses and nasty stuff out there on the internet, I can pretty quickly find salient points when I'm looking for stuff like this. And sometimes I may have to skim through 8 or 10 or 12 different articles to find what's on point, but it's available, which is nice. I really am grateful for that. The ability to research things out and to study things out to my satisfaction. And really, I'm the only one I have to please. I mean, I know I have to please you at a certain level, but the teaching has to be at a level that I would lay hands on. And I could go through the motions and get up here and be out of fellowship and do a half-assed job, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to do that. And so it has to be up to my standards. And my standards, as you probably guess, high. I haven't cut corners in a lot of areas and don't intend to. So again, there's a consistent relationship between these things. Three, however, an excess of wine often leads to aggression and violence, even among those that do not pursue a criminal lifestyle. How many people have woken up in the drunk tank the next day and wondered, how did I get here? At least when I was tripping on acid, I remembered how I got there. I wasn't in the drunk tank, but I was in jail. But I remembered how I got there. But that didn't make it any more fun being in jail. So I'm not, again, not advocating LSD and going to jail. Neither of those things are really what you should be doing. Stay away from them. So four, alcohol may encourage aggression or violence by disrupting normal brain function, which usually restrains impulse. The problem is impulse control, isn't it? And people that drink begin to lose this rapidly. They lose impulse control quickly and it gets worse and worse as they go if it's not checked. Inappropriate aggression may cause one to misjudge social cues. You become the Sheldon of the Christian life. You can't judge social cues when you're drinking to excess. People may be warning you, back off, and you don't get it because you're not cognizant really of all that's going on around you. And sadly enough, this is true enough of people that don't even drink. They can't read social cues. Like, leave me alone at that time. So, and they may overreact to a perceived threat. I think, for instance, when the king walked in there back in Esther and saw Haman falling on the couch, he wasn't attacking Esther. There's no question about that. He was begging for his life. Did the king misread the situation? Say he's trying to rape the queen. Yes, he did. That's a verse that proves the very point we've got right here. I don't have any doubts that he misread that situation. He was mad to start with. He stormed out in a rage. And typically speaking, rage is pretty hard to control once it's in control. That's the problem. People do all kinds of stuff under rage they would never do. They destroy stuff. I remember I got mad once and decided I was mad. And I'm mad, I'm going to show you. Threw my $100 set of sunglasses against the wall. Well, no more $100 sunglasses. So there's certain discipline associated with all this stupidity. And I don't even think I was drunk then. I don't even think I was drinking then. That was just anger. Got really mad about something. And nobody knows how to push your buttons any better than that husband or wife, do they? We all know where each other lives. And so that's, our, you know, in the home, this is where we're supposed to have domestic tranquility. And wine, excess of alcohol doesn't help that necessarily at all. So they may overreact to a perceived threat or fail to assess properly the risk of acting on an immediate violent impulse. And you see this, people act on a violent impulse and boom, suddenly they're knocked out. They didn't judge the situation rightly. You know, they thought they were 6 feet, 10 feet tall and bulletproof. Unfortunately, the guy they were fighting was 12 feet tall and bulletproof. And outweighed him by 50 pounds. And again, I've seen all this. I've stupidly challenged people when I was drinking. Oh, God. I'm lucky to be alive, frankly, to be honest. For a bunch of reasons, not just that. But there's a bunch of times God's clearly kept me alive. Why? I still wonder. But here I am. Here I am now, entertain me. Well, F, the excessive use of alcohol with the associated sin of gluttony is a part of the hedonistic lifestyle, which is implicated in reducing one to poverty. Proverbs chapter 21, 21:17. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. And he who loves wine and oil will not become rich. And not oil in the sense of petroleum for your car and all that. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about luxuries. The people that are busy pursuing high-priced luxuries won't become rich. Why? Because they're going to spend all their money on these, quote, luxuries they need. By the way, these are not synonyms. Luxury does not equal need. I'm going to close that and start again. Oops, I saved it. I didn't want to save it. So, luxury does not equal need. They're not the same thing. These are different items. Now, if God provides a luxury, I'm all for it. I've never begrudged anybody anything. If God blesses you with something, that's fine. But if God blesses you with it, it's not you lunging under your sin nature because you want it, and I want it now. You know, like the little blueberry girl in Willy Wonka. I want it now. I want it all. Also, chapter 23. See, now how many pastors can work Willy Wonka into their sermon today? Verse 20, chapter 23 there. Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat. I look at these things, and I'll tell you something, it isn't a sport, competition eating. I mean, I make jokes about sports like hockey and golf and other things, bowling. I mean, I love that scene in Kingpin where he walks in and they're sitting there and they're all eating pizza and hot dogs, and huge guys, 200, 400, 500 pounds. And he says, man, look at these athletes. No, those aren't athletes. I can take 5 steps and deliver a bowling ball down the alley. I'm hardly an athlete. So, or for the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty. And drowsiness will clothe one with rags. And guess what? Heavy drinking and eating a lot makes you drowsy. Who could have seen that coming? But it does. Well, one, apart from the money spent on alcohol. Now, let's consider that. Let's consider that the person who's spending money on alcohol, does he really have money to spend on alcohol? Are other things going undone? Other responsibilities in his niche not getting fulfilled? If they are, then obviously he doesn't even have the money to spend on alcohol. This is the need for people to have a budget. If they don't have a budget, they are not going to be able to handle things. And if you don't live in a... I'm not sure what's going on here. This thing is just not working, though. Let's try this. Belt tip, blue, black. No, just not working today. So I'll look at it when I get home. So when you have a budget and you got your priorities out, okay, doctrinal givings first, then you got to pay rent, then you got to pay utilities, then you got to do certain things that you've obligated yourself. This is why, see, credit card debt comes way down the list. It's not a need. It's not to say occasionally you can't have something on a credit card that's a need, but generally speaking, no, it's not, because it has to come so far down the list. You can't start figuring, well, I'm going to go out and waste $400 this month, so I put it on my budget. No, you may not have. And that's another old thing. When you look at this budget, before you put luxuries in, you got to look at the budget compared to what your income is. Or if you're not breaking even, it's not going to work. And this is one of the problems of people who won't live on budgets, and then people bail them out, and they help them, and that's okay at some level. But does it solve the problem long term? No. No. And again, apart from the money spent on alcohol, which could be certainly used for more important and productive things in life, Heavy drinkers often suffer other economic problems because of this vice. Two, these include significantly lower wages. People who drink and drink heavily have a hard time keeping a job, let's face it. They're going to end up with lower paying jobs, frankly. Because they're not going to go out and get technical skills and work hard and advance themselves. And I say technical, I mean you could go to a vocational school or college or whatever it is. But these aren't, again, be all and end all, but they are certainly will advance you at some level in terms of your job, in terms of what you can make. And again, are we all about the money and making a lot of money in this life? We shouldn't be. That's not really what we're here for. Whatever God provides, we just have to learn to be comfortable with. And accept that and be patient and thankful. And then maybe God will provide more if you handle the little bit He gives you. But if you're not handling the little bit right, only God would be a fool to give you more. Anybody would be a fool to give you more. If you prove you can't handle a small thing, can you watch my dog for an hour and you come back and your dog is dead? Would you trust him with your baby? Okay, you've proven yourself, now watch the kids. No, you wouldn't. Why would God do that? That makes God a fool. To bless people who've proven they can't handle basic blessing in the first place. That's not good. So significantly lower wages, lost employment due to the effects of drinking to excess. People lie about this. They call in sick. They're not sick. They're hungover. Hangover is not an excuse for not applying on your job or a doctrine or anywhere. You say, well, it's, I can't work. I'm sick. And that's what they'll tell them. I'm sick. You're not sick. You're hungover. Don't call hangover. And see, drunkenness is not a sickness. It's not like the flu. It's not viral. It's not spread by contact. It's not bacterial. See, they make everything a disease. Because we want to reduce everything to physical. In our, not we, but the culture. Wants to make everything physical and material. That's just materialism. That's all it is. In its worst form. So they call in sick. Well, they get fired frequently. Then they have difficult. Well, this all works together now, doesn't it? Difficulty in finding employment. Why? You know, I don't know if you've ever been in charge anywhere or had to hire somebody. I've been on both ends of this. I've been on the employee deal and I've been on the employer deal of, you know, having to interview people and hire them. And you see this person and they come in and their resume has like 20 jobs on it. And you think, wow, they've got a lot of experience. No, they can't keep a job. They can't keep a job. And then when you interview them, and every job is, well, the supervisor had it out for me, my coworkers did me in, blah, blah, blah. It's never a problem on their part. Don't hire that person. They're a liar and a BSer. And they might even believe their own BS. That's what's bad. And so they have a hard time getting jobs. And this all is part of the discipline that goes with this. And some of it's just, again, self-induced. God doesn't have to lift a finger to make this happen. He doesn't have to actively discipline the person. He can just let them run their course. And this will happen naturally. Increased medical and legal expenses. I've known a believer that has wasted, one particular believer I know has wasted in excess of $50,000 just on medical bills from drinking. And won't quit. Sad. You can't make them. We can't live your life for you. Even if I know what's right for you, I can't do it for you. You have to do it. And this is why the doctrine has to work. We have to give it time. Say, okay, it's time to grow up. After a point, it becomes, you know, childishness. It's okay for a while, but then you got to grow out of it. And so, and increased costs for insurance. And by the way, if you get busted for a DUI, plan on about $10,000. And then plan on a lot of inconvenience. Because first, you're going to go to jail. And if you've never been to jail, don't start now. You won't like it. It's not pleasant even to visit. I visited. It's not even fun. But it's not pleasant to live in. And so you're going to go to jail. You're going to have to get bailed out. You're going to have to pay for that. You're going to have to pay court costs. You're going to have to pay to have one of those little deals put on your driving, your steering column. So you have to blow in before you can drive. And there's a monthly fee for that, by the way. And so you have all these things you're going to face. Legal costs, court costs, time off work, possible loss of your job. People have been fired over this. And so while people may say, okay, it was a one-time deal, I failed. Okay, fine. We can allow for that. People make mistakes. People with two or three DUIs, they should never be allowed behind a wheel, period. And if we have to, incarcerate those people. Because those people really are a danger to society. If they insist on going out and driving without a license and under alcohol, they shouldn't be out there. And for those of you who've ever worked in an emergency room, how much of the stuff that comes in there is alcohol-related? Alcohol or drug-related. I mean, they're both addictions, I get it. Violence, stupidity. Oh, my friend told me to jump off the bridge. Unfortunately, the water was only 4 feet deep. And I stupidly jumped because I was drunk. And you're paralyzed now. Lots of bad things can happen, as we know. So again, excessive consumption. Additionally, those that engage in drunkenness often make both short-term and long-term decisions that are detrimental to a sound financial strategy. And you better have a financial strategy. Do you have a job strategy? Obviously, we can only control so much about the future. We can't. We have to accept it. We have to worry mostly about today. Today has enough trouble of its own. Leave tomorrow to the Lord. But does that mean we're not to plan ahead? People have used this and called it faith rest. That's not faith rest. Faith rest recognizes that you're supposed to go to the ant who plans ahead. What's the ant here for? A word of wisdom to people who won't plan ahead. I mean, obviously, there are certain things we cannot control, no matter how sound your plan is. I've done everything I can to make sure that should anything happen to me, Linda's taken care of. That could all evaporate tomorrow. But I still have to do what I believe to be the morally right things and not leave her in the lurch if I die. So I've got to plan ahead. I've got to think ahead. I've got to have a strategy. If your strategy is this, put your money in the market and don't worry about it. The market gives and the market takes away. Blessed be the name of the market. To me, that's not a sound financial strategy long term. Because let's face it, we're at about 21,000 right now, we're closing in. I don't remember the exact figure. But there's going to be a pullback. And everybody that's highly leveraged now, who's put their money in on this big bubble, and their 401k, hallelujah. If you leave it in there when the 10%, 15% correction happens, oh, bummer. What happened to my 401k? So I don't allow even my financial planner to control my finances. I listen to her. I pay attention to what she says. But I make the final decision. And I found that my strategies are working at least as well as hers. And I'm not even a genius. The fact is, if God will bless you if you work on this. You don't have to be a financial genius. This involves certain things like saving, having a savings account, being prepared. Obviously, you can't do that all the time. We know that. Things will happen. But long term, people who drink to excess, they're not doing any of this, are they? No. They're more worried about where's that next drink coming from. Not about what's going to happen 6 months down the road. When they lose their job and their house and they're out on the street. And that's where a lot of these people end up, not all of them. So excessive consumption of alcohol also results in fatigue and lethargy, which is manifested by procrastination and laziness. The tendency towards self-gratification and laziness is also manifested in the failure to keep one's word. And in that regard, alcoholics are notorious liars. How do you know an alcoholic's lying? He's talking. His lips are moving. Generally speaking, he's lying to you. He will tell you what you want to hear in order to get what he wants. He will try to make himself look good and not admit the truth. He will cover up for himself. He will blame it on other people. These people cannot be trusted, sadly. And that's another thing. You look at all these things that come out of imprudent use of alcohol. Do any of these seem good? Is this the lifestyle we're supposed to be living? And all of that? No. Who often avoid responsibility for their own actions, blame others for their failures, and lie to conceal their behaviors. And I've had people, I've looked them directly in the eye and asked them very straightforward questions. I've had them look me right back in the eye and lie their ass off. And it was over alcohol. Not over something else. Over alcohol. Now, that's not saying people don't lie about other stuff. They do. But I know that this is the behavior. And you have to deal with this. And this makes it very difficult because in the local church setting, this kind of behavior is not conducive to fellowship, is it? I mean, really, this kind of person, isn't, you can't really have fellowship with them because you never know if they're telling you the truth. You never know what's coming out of their mouth, if it's true or not. They can't be trusted. And they'll prove that to you. And yet, as believers, we have to have to maintain, and this is difficult, to maintain the attitude that I'm here to help if I can. And if I can help you, I will. But then at a point, we have to learn how to say no and wash our hands of them and move on, sadly. That's too bad. But some people, they're not going to change. And they'll just drag you down with them. And use your money. You'll help them out. They'll need it again. And again, as we pointed out back in the deal when we were talking about borrowing and lending. If you loan people money, give them people money, the odds are they're going to need it again and again and again and again and again. Now, again, we have to work on these things a little bit at a time. You're not going to change all this behavior overnight. It's not going to happen. Small choices here and there that add up to a changing lifestyle. No, okay, I got my choice this week. I can buy lunch meat or I can buy alcohol. Choose the lunch meat. You know, choose what's healthy for you. And I recognize all of this in Bible class. When we sit here and we're all here and we're on our good behavior and our nice Sunday clothes. At least I am. I'm kidding. I don't care how you dress as long as you're not, you know, immoral or anything. But it doesn't matter. But we talk about this and yeah, it's all easy to say. You know. But living it out in a day-to-day lifestyle of making these decisions that are hard at the time. Because when you're used to catering to yourself, the hardest thing to do is say no to yourself. And this is the problem with the person who drinks to excess. They're constantly catering to themselves. And with various rationales. It doesn't hurt me. It's only hurting me. It doesn't hurt anybody else. Yeah, it hurts us. Hurts. If you're in a royal family, it hurts other believers. It does. I've met believers who suffered at the hands of people who just drank their lives away. I've suffered to some extent at the hands of these people. And again, nothing good comes out of this that I can see. Well, gee, because alcohol in excess lowers the inhibitions. Illicit sexual activity is another vice associated with too much drinking. We saw Genesis 19, fun, Lot and his daughters. Incest is great, you know. No, it's not. This is very inappropriate. Even at that time, when this was maybe considered halfway legitimate, we don't look at it now and think, oh, good. That's what you need. Lamentations 4:21. Rejoice, O daughter of Edom, you who dwells in the land of Uz. But the cup will come around to you as well. You will become drunk and make yourself naked. And when you hear these stories, and occasionally you get them on the news, this person was running down the street, jumping on cars naked. You can bet there was a mind-altering substance involved. Was it alcohol, PCP? Yeah, no. And I've heard all the weird stories. Again, I mean, I was a child of the 60s. I was, you know, the counterculture and all that. And my poor ponytail. No more. But, you know, I've lived through all of this. I've done the stuff. Some of the stuff I read about and hear about, I just shake my head because I think I did acid for a year. And I never thought I could fly. Never wanted to get naked and jump on cars. Never, you know, never did any of this weird stuff that people attribute to drugs. Maybe the problem isn't the drugs. I'm not saying you should be doing them. Don't get me wrong again. This is not, don't do drugs. But the point is, maybe some of these behaviors are already there. Maybe they're just below the surface and this stuff just triggers it. Maybe they're weirdos to start with, which is a very good possibility. So, you will become drunk and make yourself naked. Again, the idea here is illicitly naked, not just running around streaking. Although, that's kind of weird, too. I never saw the, you know. I just, you know, for somebody who was so liberal as a child, I just am so conservative now. Where are we at now here? Habakkuk 2:15. There's a song out there by a guy named Ian Hunter. I don't know if you know who he is, but he used to be in a group called Motha Hoople. And one of his songs on his album is called "I Am What I Hated When I Was Young." And I am everything I hated when I was young. Which goes to show how smart you are when you're young, right? You know, you grow up and you realize, oh man, I was really stupid. I had a lot of weird, bad ideas. Habakkuk 2:15. And 16. "Woe to you who make your neighbors drink, who mix your venom even to make them drunk so as to look upon their nakedness. You will be filled with disgrace rather than honor. Now, you yourself drink and expose your own nakedness. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you." This all sounds like judgment to me for this behavior. And illicit sexual activity is what's in view. And often that was just comprised by that single Hebrew word, nakedness. It covered a whole realm of illicit sexual activity. From basic fornication, to adultery, to incest, to bestiality, to whatever it was. Any illicit sexual activity was very often summed up in this one word, nakedness. All the things that come out of that. Mark 6:21-22 in the New Testament. Here again, the text, you somewhat knowing the isagogics is more helpful here, because this girl didn't come in and do a ballet. She wasn't, you know, there for aesthetic purposes and to raise the culture level in the room. It was a seductive striptease type of dance, okay? And I get this, and I hear these people, you know, I've heard about people, they want to go to gentlemen's clubs. There's no gentlemen in there. And there's no ladies. Who's in these clubs? Well, it's people engaged in this type of behavior that's sad and depressing and discouraging and demeaning. I mean, I think it's demeaning because I look at these men and think, gross. You're a pig. And this type of behavior, our culture may cater to it, but it doesn't make it right. And so when she came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his dinner guests. So again, this was not Swan Lake. You know, this was pole dancing. Maybe not to that extreme, but it wasn't good. You know, I think it's always good for a group of 30, 40, 50-year-old men to sit around and watch teenagers bump and grind. It's disgusting. This type of behavior. And to think that this didn't come out of this big banquet and all the drinking and all that was going on, it clearly did. So this is associated with these things. And then, again, Romans 13, our verse that got us started on this, it talks about fornication, immorality, and lasciviousness. Well, H, the excessive consumption of alcohol results in dissipation, which is defined as the squandering of money, energy, or resources. Well, which one of these does drinking alcohol squander? All of the above? It squanders all of them. I mean, if you drink to drunkenness. Now, this is back in our Ephesians passage. Again, Ephesians 5:18. Do not be under controlled by wine. For that is, again, dissipation. But be controlled by the Spirit. So one, this should not be surprising, since Paul describes drunkenness in terms of dissipation or debauchery. Debauchery is, you know, people self-indulge, but debauchery is extravagant self-indulgence. It's just giving in to your lowest, most base instincts and running with them. And you have a sin nature. I have a sin nature. We all have. We sit here and we look nice, I know. But we all have issues that we deal with and we recognize. People have baser instincts. Some are better than others. Some are worse. This is where it's all relative righteousness. It doesn't matter. But giving in to these things, indulging them on a regular basis. Well, two, the Greek noun asotia, dissipation, denotes the character of one who is asotos, literally one who cannot be saved. However, this term should not be understood in a phase one sense, but in a phase two sense. Here's where the fundies will take the verse, rip it out of context, and apply it phase one. Do not get drunk with wine because this is, and I've heard John MacArthur do this, if you know who he is. And if you do, don't listen to him or read his stuff. That's actually a direct order. And I don't often issue direct orders, but don't read this idiot's stuff. He's a known, well-known fundy out there, runs a big church out in California. And his translation of this verse ran something like this. Do not get drunk with wine in which is a hopeful, incurable sickness from which you'll never recover. I've lived through a hangover. I have recovered. That's taking the verse way too far. That's not what it says. And he essentially makes it, you'll lose salvation at some point. He won't come out and say it, but that's what he implies. And so this isn't a phase one verse. You're not asotia. You're not unsavable as a believer. And by the way, who's he writing to here, you suppose? Let's see. Let me go look. I think I can find out. To the saints. Oh, he's writing to believers. To the saints at Ephesus. So he's not talking about people who aren't saved. He's talking about people who are saved. And he's warning them of the dangers of this stuff. So again, what cannot be saved? To say, well, then a person who drinks and gets drunk regularly, they could never be a believer. Wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. Asotia, point three, refers to wastefulness and denotes the action of one who engages in reckless behaviors, squandering the time, opportunities, and blessings he has been given. The adverb is notably used of the prodigal son. For instance, in Luke 15, verse 13. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together. This was his father's inheritance. He talked him out of his inheritance while he was alive. Why he did it. His dad's a good guy, I guess. Gave him his money. And went on a journey to a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. The word asotos, the adverb, is used here to describe his lifestyle. It was wasteful. It was profligate. Guess who's really popular at the bar? The guy buying all the drinks. And guess who's really popular at the party? The guy paying for everything. And guess who's really popular? The guy that has the money to throw around. And guess what happens to popular guy when the money's gone? Well, he's not popular anymore. Nobody likes him. His friends run away from him, he says. Proverbs says. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country. And he began to be impoverished. Well, where are all the people he was hanging with? Where are all his friends? Oh, he didn't have any friends. While he was paying for things, see, everybody's friends to the man with money. And that's not the way life is supposed to be lived. That's not biblical. But unfortunately, that's the cosmos and that's the way the world works. So the word translated here, asotos, is translated loose, which is a weird way of translating it because it doesn't mean anything like loose. It means profligate in that sense. Debauched. It's a much stronger term than the way they translate it, unless you understand what all loose living means. It's like loose thinking, loose living. What? Define it for me a little bit. So, our time is gone. We're going to have to stop there. So we will continue. We'll get back to this on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship together in the things of your plan. May God, the Holy Spirit, enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen.